So, Justine.
Yeah.
We said naughty words.
Yes. Yeah? We said a few very naughty words.
Do you think that requires a language advisory?
Yeah, because we try not to use too many naughty words or very naughty words. And there was some questionable content in this one.
There you go. You've been advised.
So, yeah.
You can talk now. Oh, am I starting? Okay.
God.
Hello, I'm Brandon.
And I'm Justine.
And this is the Cozy Co-op, a podcast made by a game journalist and a creative writer to talk about video games. Hello, Justine.
Hi, Brandon.
What are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about Dragon Age, and we're going to do the trilogy of games instead of just the one.
Okay, interesting. I've played about a half hour of the first one.
I haven't played the first one myself. I've just played the two after that. I was trying to say sequential, but I don't think that's the right word.
I mean, sequels are sequential.
Yeah.
Technically
that's
speaking.
Not what the word is, though.
The two sequentials?
No. So I've played Dragon Age 2 and Inquisition, and you played a little bit of Origins. So I guess it's mostly going to be talking about the second two, but...
Did they call it Origins knowing they were going to make two more?
No, the reason it's called Origins is... Not because it's, you know, the origin of the universe of this Dragon Age world. It's because you get to choose your origin as the character.
Okay, I got you.
So if you're like the mage, elf, or the dwarf, or whatever, you have a different origin story.
That's true. I recall I was magic-y and I had like a special magic-based intro. Before we get into that, though, we have a bit of news to talk about.
Right.
So... Fortnite Mobile. You've heard about Fortnite and PlayerUnknown's Battle Royale and, like, Battlegrounds.
How could I not?
Well, they've been moving into the mobile market. They've been making mobile games.
Mobile.
Let me call my friend on the mobile.
On my mobile phone.
Well, Fortnite has come to mobile. And the weird thing is, it only recently is now available for everyone. Before, you had to be invited to play it.
Mm.
And it's only for iOS, not Android phones. Even though, in the month of February, it has earned over $126 million. And all of the purchases are purely cosmetic, too. There's no, like, game-winning stuff you'll find with Candy Crush or something. All cosmetics. Just the mobile version, not even accounting any money they made on PC or console.
How did a mobile game make that much money?
That's the funniest thing, is this game has been causing a lot of stir in the media. Schools are complaining about how many kids are playing during school.
Yeah.
Like, to the point to where there's actually now, when you load up the game, there's a llama that says Mr. Anderson says not to play Fortnite at school. Which I guess is the name of... I might be getting the name wrong, but it was the name of a teacher who wrote into Epic Games complaining. This game is doing absolute
the ultimate bank. Killjoy.
You watched me this morning playing the PlayerUnknown mobile game, which I'm not a fan of the controls.
Yeah, you were having some issues with the shooty shooting.
I'm just not a mobile gamer. I don't like mobile games.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Spyro reignited.
Your volume level.
Spyro.
Stop it. You went red. You just went red.
Look at that lovely peak. So, Spyro, the classic purple dragon boy.
I confirmed this before you did.
Okay, girl, I knew it. I knew about it before society knew about it.
All right, okay. I was on the Spyro train before Spyro came out.
The Spyro is having a remastered trilogy come out. People are excited for this because it's kind of like the Spyro version of when Crash Bandicoot did the same thing last year.
I didn't know Crash Bandicoot came back.
Yeah, the Insane Trilogy. You not hear about that?
No.
Last year, they did
this
a thing.
This was before we were doing a video game podcast.
Fair enough. Last year, there was a thing called the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy,
mm-hmm.
where it was the first three Crash games remastered, and like high graphics and everything. It looked
really
nice.
For what consoles?
Originally PlayStation 4, but it's actually coming to Xbox, PC, and Nintendo Switch later this year.
Can you do it on Xbox 360, or is it just
no.
Xbox?
Sorry, you're playing a dead console. I know, it's rough.
I thought the 360 was better than the one. That's just me.
It's the successor. How can it be better than the one? The one is built upon it.
Well, I didn't like the Xbox One.
That's fair.
It had better graphics, but I didn't like the Xbox One.
I don't like it either, to be honest. But that's a thing that's happening. It's expected to release, I believe they said, September 21st, 2018.
Okay.
So it looks so much better. Last bit of news is Deckard Cain is making his way into Heroes of the Storm. Does that make any sense to you?
No, I've never heard of Deckard Cain.
Heroes of the Storm, the MOBA made by Blizzard. So, you know, it's League of Legends style and all that.
Sure.
But it features various Blizzard IP. So it's got StarCraft characters. It's got Overwatch characters.
Mm-hmm.
Deckard Cain is a character in the Diablo series.
Ah.
And he is a support melee fighter who he drops potions for your allies to heal with. And he puts his enemies to sleep with long, boring stories.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like my kind of dude.
It makes me feel bad for him.
Aww.
His ultimate move is he tells a story and everyone nearby falls asleep.
I can't do this. No, Deckard!
So he's joining the Heroes of the Storm roster. People who play heroes may care more about this than others. That's all I have for news, though. Let us get into...
Wait, why would they care more about that?
Or would they care more about Deckard Cain? Well, if they play the game, they're going to care more about the characters in it.
Okay.
Anyway, story. So, tell me about Dragon Age. Give me like an overlap of the world story stuff happening.
So, Dragon Age is kind of difficult to sort of sum up in one go because it's one of the things that actually people complain about with Dragon Age is there is a huge amount of the lore and story building and stuff that happens outside of the video games. So they have novelizations and comic books and a lot of extra content that you have to buy. And that was something that was an issue with Inquisition, which is the most recent game to come out. I don't remember when that came, a few years ago when I was still in high school.
It's been a while.
Yeah. It was when the Xbox One was still fairly new, though, because we had just gotten an Xbox One and then we got Dragon Age for it.
It's on 360, isn't it?
Yeah, they had it for 360, too.
It was around that time where they were still supporting 360.
Because I have it for 360. But with Inquisition, a lot of what happened is really grounded in DLC and extended universe content and not necessarily what happened in the main games of Origins or Dragon Age 2. But in essence, it's big fantasy world where...
Medieval fantasy, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Medieval fantasy world in a land called Thedas. And that seems to be...
I'm not a fan of that name.
Why?
Thedas?
Thedas. Well, actually, I can tell you why it's called Thedas.
Why?
Because when the devs were making the map for like all the countries and stuff in the game, they had written up in the corner the DAS, which is the Dragon Age setting.
Oh.
And then they just left it, and so it's called Thedas.
That's funny. I like that.
So I can't tell if Thedas is just the continent or if it's supposed to be the world in which all of this takes place.
Gotcha.
But all of the people in the countries are within Thedas. And the big problem is not even really dragons.
It was man all along.
It is... A lot of it is... The issue in Origins is the Blight, which is like a plague that sort of turns people undead.
Zombie plague.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then in Origins, the way you combat this issue is you become a Grey Warden, who are people that they take the taint... That is what it's called.
I've seen those videos.
It is. It's like you drink what's basically like it's the blight, like
taint juice.
Yes. Stop. I think the ceremony is called the joining, but you drink this and you basically poison yourself.
I see.
But in doing so, it makes you able to track Darkspawn, which are the things that the Blight creates. And then you can go destroy them and stop them from coming up from the Deep Roads, which are the underground labyrinth that was, I think, created by dwarves. And then the Blight is created by an archdemon every time it comes around. So every few centuries, there's another Blight.
Inconvenient.
Yeah. And then the Grey Wardens have to come back and defeat it. So there's always, you know, there's always some Grey Wardens. And then when the Blight happens, they start recruiting.
Gotcha.
Anyway, that's Origins. And then Dragon Age 2 is completely not about that. It is a little bit about the aftermath of the Blight. So the reason you end up in a city called Kirkwall, which is in the Free Marches.
Kirkwall. Okay.
You end up there because you and your family, the Hawk family, you were leaving your homeland, I think, in Ferelden because of the Blight that hit Ferelden.
Okay.
And so you go to the Free Marches to kind of start over because everything you had is gone. The area was overtaken by Darkspawn. And then that's pretty much all the Blight plays a part in Dragon Age 2. The rest of it is social.
Okay, it's so about down with capitalism.
No.
Bourgeoisie.
It is about the tension between mages and Templars.
Okay.
And then this kind of is the heart of a lot of the future struggles in Dragon Age. So the Blight starts it off in Origins, and that's your big enemy, but there you still see how mages are distrusted and mistreated, and then it's just multiplied 100-fold in DA2. And then the rest of this game really becomes about how, if you have magic, if you're a mage, it's very dangerous for you out in the world because people don't trust you, they think you're dangerous, and they'll put you in a place called the Circle, which is where they basically keep all the mages.
I'm noticing a lot of parallels with, like, real life events.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of the issues with fandom comes in the Dragon Age stuff, because people want to argue about the real life politics of it when...
That's such a common
what is
issue.
It an allegory? What is it an allegory for? And you know, people getting all upset. I mean, when the fandom was at its height around the time Inquisition came out, I unfollowed so many people for getting so uppity and like real upset with people about their opinions on video game characters, and it just gets really trashy really fast. So.
I mean, I live streamed Undertale. I understand.
Yeah, it's kind of that. Like the fandom is really not great in Dragon Age because there's just so many. It's not even that people.
Well, that is to say, there are good people in this fandom. There's good people in all fandoms,
right?
But you cannot avoid the vocal minority of less pleasant individuals.
And it just seemed so frequent because all anyone ever wants to argue about is social justice mm-hmm. when Dragon Age is concerned, because that's what so much of the game is about, is mages versus Templars and whose side are you on, which really comes to a head in Inquisition, because due to events that happened in the second game, an entire civil war has broken out between mages and Templars.
Oof.
And this is all across like the Free Marches and Ferelden, and it's just in Orlais, it's just kind of everywhere. And you actually end up choosing, like, you're not involved in this civil war. You help out a couple of people and you kind of do things to help your own cause, which is figuring out who killed the divine, who's the head of the big religion that's basically Catholicism.
Now, does it let you do that thing that video games like to do where it's you get to choose which side you want to support?
But it doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah.
Yes. So
Skyrim was real bad about that one.
Like I said, you're not really involved in the Mage Templar war, like combat mm-hmm. going on. That's not your bag. You're creating the Inquisition again.
Yeah.
It was an old organization and now you're bringing it back so that you can bring people together from different factions under one name so that you can stop a ancient magister named Corypheus from basically destroying everything. And when you do get involved with the mages and the Templars, it is strictly because Corypheus is going to try and recruit one or both of those factions. And so you need to go pick one and or you need at least one of them to be on your side. And if you go with one, the other won't work with you, which is the game's way of saying you can only choose one of these factions to fight for you. But once you've done that, it makes no difference. So
I gotcha.
If you choose Templars, you have an army of really buff people who have anti-magic powers, mm-hmm. because they drink a magical liquid called lyrium.
Yeah. Yeah. Taint juice.
No, that's not the taint juice.
I'm sorry. It's T2.
No, it's complete. It's a different. It's a complete. All right. Well, then the mages, you have an army of magical people who are super powerful. But yeah. On the other hand, whoever you don't pick, Corypheus does recruit. So either you have people with anti-magic versus a magical force, or you have a magical force versus anti-magic force. So it makes no difference. And you pick up a different companion depending on the route you choose. So if you go and get the mages, you pick up Dorian.
Okay.
If you go and get the Templars, you pick up Cole. Regardless of which one you picked, once you have done this and then there's an attack on your initial home base, you will get that other companion.
Okay.
You get them anyway.
Which one do you want first?
Yeah. So that is another issue with Dragon Age, is it, you know, people wanted it to be, especially Inquisition, they wanted it to be more like Mass Effect, in which depending on how much you did and how many people you helped and how many assets you acquired, you did better in endgame.
Which is funny to me, because when Mass Effect 3 came out, people were very upset with how it ended.
Well, the ending, yeah, but when you go into that final battle, mm-hmm. you're more or less prepared depending on how many assets you picked up.
Okay, so your efforts up to that point do matter, though.
Yeah, to an extent.
Gotcha.
And people wanted more of that from Inquisition, because it's all set up for that. So you have requisition agents, where at all of your campsites, there's someone standing there saying, hey, we need this stuff for a geological survey. Hey, we need this stuff to make tents. Hey, we need this stuff to make translation manuals.
So it's like your fetch quest guy.
Exactly. And you don't necessarily have to complete those, but they do give you perks they help you to get perks that
That's what I like. A lot of people like to bash on fetch quests for being simple, regurgitated content. And I can understand that, you know, there's not exactly a lot of excitement to just go over here, get this thing, and come back. But
all Dragon Age is fetch quests.
But there's a sense of satisfaction to it when your efforts doing that actually help develop something. Like, yeah, when you're going out and getting whatever bit, you're rewarded with
something. Yeah, which is fine, because when it is stuff like tents or boats or something that I'm supposed to help make, that's fine. What is not fine is the sheer amount of geological surveys that they ask you to do, which is basically go get a bunch of rocks and bring it back.
We want to know Mother Earth intimately.
Yeah, so so it's stuff like that where, you know, it could have gone towards building, you know, some tangible, your army is better now because you did this. But it's not really like that. And then you have all these war table operations, some of which lead to something cool. Others are just, you just do it.
I see.
And it would have been nice to see a little more from that. So I mean, I'm most familiar with Inquisition.
Okay.
And I think that game, I've played it so many times. I've had like 16 different Inquisitors, because you can. That was something that excited people about this one is... in Origins, like I was saying, how it's different origins for different characters, you could play any, you know, you could play human, elf, dwarf, and then any class with those, which would give you something different.
There are certain classes you could not be if you were a certain race.
Dwarves can't be mages, because there are no dwarf mages.
And I thought that was, I was torn on that, because I found it very interesting that, it makes sense, you know, you're not going to find a dwarf mage. But I think the class I wanted to be, you couldn't be a human for.
Which is what?
I can't remember what it was.
Okay.
But it was like just a vague offset, maybe. So like, I felt
interesting.
Almost hindered by my own choice.
It might have been the amount of origins they planned for as well.
Yeah, so I wasn't really that bothered by it in the end. I was just like, oh, okay, I guess I'll be an elf then.
Well, in Dragon Age 2, since you are a part of the Hawk family... and you have a specific origin story, you are a human and you can pick mage,
for
rogue.
Two you're just set.
Yes. And then for Inquisition, it's back to you can be whatever you want, including a kunari, which people were very excited about.
Remind me what those are.
Kunari, you don't have much interaction with them.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. They're like the tiefling style people?
Sure, yeah. They're really big horned people.
Big horn. God. I can't remember what the World of Warcraft ones are called.
Oh, those are Draenei.
Draenei. Are they like comparable to them too?
Yes, except they don't have hooves. That's or tails.
They all kind of have the similar style going
Yeah, it's funny because I went to look up tieflings on Pinterest and I was getting a whole lot of Kunari and Draenei OCs in the mix too because the algorithms could not differentiate.
Which we will touch in. I want to talk about Iron Bull.
God, okay, we will definitely
talk about
that. I have
a lot I want to talk about in a minute.
In this first half, I'm just trying to give an overview of like the games and what works, what doesn't. Mm-hmm. So Inquisition, you have a lot more options of who to play. But the one complaint about that is you don't get enough chance to bring out that background. So particularly when you play an elf, you're a Dalish elf, which is, if you want to think about it as like a native kind of person, this is an elf that hasn't been in the city. They've stayed with their clan. They're nomadic. They try to hold to their traditions.
Would you like compare this to like Native American leaving reservation type thing?
Yeah, this is, I think they're very comparable to Native Americans because they are, their culture has been all but wiped out because the people in Teventer took them as slaves for centuries.
Teventer?
Yes, it's the northern country where
I'm loving these names.
They're very good names.
Good names.
A lot of Thedas used to be taken up by the Teventer Imperium, which was all about magic, and a lot of the time it was blood magic, and they sacrificed slaves, and yeah. And then they're always at war with the Kunari, because the dogma of Teventer versus the dogma of the Kune is very opposing.
I understand.
So they've always kind of been at war with each other, even when they're not at war, technically. They're still not friendly. But the Dalish had been enslaved by those in the Teventer Imperium for a very, very long time, to the point where in a lot of Inquisition, what you find out is so much of Dalish culture is what they were told to do in slavery. This is not what happened before then, which is kind of sad, but I'll touch on that in a minute because there's a lot I want to say about that.
Uh-huh.
But if you're a Dalish Inquisitor, there's not enough chances for you to really make that shine. And in fact, there are moments when people say very insensitive things and you have no options of saying something nasty back.
Okay.
You just kind of accept it. And it's like, I don't want to be a passive Dalish elf. I want to fight about this.
As an Argonian in Skyrim visiting, I think it's Winterhold.
Mm-hmm.
Very racist,
yeah,
stronghold.
Yes, yes.
Like, particularly with dark elves, but like Argonians and Khajiits as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also in Shadenhall, maybe one of the southern towns in Oblivion, the other Elder Scrolls game. It's basically Khajiits and Argonians saying racist things about each other.
Yeah. So the major racism is against elves in the Dragon Age universe.
Uh-huh.
They get called things like knife ear, which is a
ooh,
racist
that is
thing.
A racist
yeah.
term.
Yeah. So, and then when they're in the cities, if you're a city elf, then you live in what is called an alienage.
Okay.
Which is, it's like a burrow for elves. They are sequestered to this one little area. It's usually impoverished.
So it's a ghetto.
Yes. Which is, I think, the same thing as a burrow, just different culture.
I'm sorry.
There's different names.
When I heard burrow, I literally imagined a big hole.
No, like a ghetto.
Okay.
I
didn't know
think of
burrow
the word
was another term for that.
I think that, I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure that depending on which culture it is in that sequestered neighborhood, it gets
okay.
a different name.
That's true.
So, I lost my train of thought. So that's also something you kind of see a lot in Inquisition and a lot in Dragon Age 2, because that is very much about the social
okay.
stuff going on. And that's, so I've talked a lot about Inquisition. And before our ad break, I'm going to talk about Dragon Age 2. This is probably going to be a longer episode.
Okay.
Dragon Age 2 is very different from either of the other Dragon Age games, and like it's very noticeable, because where Origins is you are heroically trying to stop the blight at any cost and taking down archdemons and running around with the future king and Inquisition, you are the head of this holy organization trying to figure out who killed the divine and trying to undo, like, quell the chaos spreading across Thedas and save the world. And
quell the chaos is my favorite punk band.
Thanks. And then and you are like the chosen one, sort of, because you're the only one that's able to close these rifts between this world and the Fade, which is where all the demons are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of like the chosen one in each of these. And then in Dragon Age 2, you're like a college kid with all of your college friends trying to figure out how to make your way in this crazy fucked up city. Oops, that was... So, Dragon Age 2, you show up, and the first thing you do is get in with a kind of mercenary group.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can make enough money to sort of survive in this city where you have no home. You were supposed to come in and have, like, a really nice home in... Oh, what are the different... Hightown. There's three sections of the city. There's Hightown, there's Lowtown, and there's Darktown.
Okay.
So Hightown, upper class, nobles. Lowtown, sort of middle class. It's not great. And then Darktown is like under city, gross, rats everywhere.
Probably smells bad.
Yeah.
Well, it's fantasy medieval times. I assume everything smells bad.
So you were supposed to have a nice home in Hightown, because that's kind of where your mother's side of the family comes from. And it's just you, your twin siblings, and your mother at this point. And you picked up a woman who's good with a sword on the way. Her name's Aveline, who ends up being in your party. And she goes into the Kirkwall Guard. She's very cool. I love Aveline. So when you get there, though, you meet up with your uncle, who has apparently gambled away all of the money.
Oof.
Lost the house in this gambling, and one of the things you find out, it wasn't his to gamble away. All of the stuff went to your mom, but he didn't think that was fair because he stayed behind to look after the grandparents.
Okay.
When they were sick, and she was the one that ran off with some dude from Ferelden. So he didn't think it was fair that she got left the money in the house, so he didn't tell her. And then ended up gambling it all away.
Oof.
So one of the quests you do is you find the deed to the house and you get it back and all of that stuff.
Messy.
Yeah. But the bigger picture is, once you establish yourself in this town, you start getting all of your companions together and whatnot. Something that makes this game special is your companions have completely independent lives, because you're all just in this city living. And yeah, this is over the course of like 6 years this game takes place, because each act is like 3 years apart. So the biggest issue is that mages are severely mistreated in the Kirkwall Tower, and the Templars are just an overly aggressive police state sort of thing, where they're constantly afraid that the mages are gonna get loose and do some damage, and so there's constant propaganda and hate crimes and whatnot. And to make matters worse, the Kunari, there's like a whole ship full of Kunari that are stranded on Kirkwall for a while, because they're looking for a relic that got stolen and no one knows anything about it. And then they decide to just kind of start fighting everybody. So then you've got all the Kunari panic going on as well, and there's just a lot of really ugliness going on in Kirkwall. It's just very, very bad socially in a lot of ways. And the game culminates in Anders, a mage companion that you have, starting the civil war with a terrorist attack by blowing up basically what is the church.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. So that starts a huge battle within Kirkwall, and almost everything is destroyed. And then you just kind of leave at the end of that. You're like, well, I'm gone.
I've played my
turn. So, and I just remember being so upset, because there's a lot of things that you really have to think through with, as far as the companions in this game. It's not all here's what you're supposed to think about things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very upset with a lot of my companions because a lot of them are very imperfect, flawed people. And Anders is one of them. And I had romanced him in my first playthrough because I thought he was so nice and so compassionate. He's a healer in Darktown. And oh man, he's so cool. And at one point in the third act, he's like, hey, I need your help with this thing. Can you go get this stuff for me? And I'm like, sure.
Oh, no.
And I did. And then he used what I got him to make the explosives that blew up the chantry.
Oh, no.
And then we're going into this final battle thing. And I get to talk to each of my companions before we go into it. And I went up to Anders and I was like so mad at this point because everyone... He had done this, and then every single person looked at me and was are you gonna side with the Templars or the mages? And I was like, I didn't do anything. This isn't me. And so I went up and talked to him, and I was like, oh man, how's this gonna go? And he's like, I would understand if you didn't forgive me, but, you know, I still love you, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember picking the nice dialogue option, I'm not gonna... abandon you, Anders, or whatever, because in my brain I'm going, you definitely just committed a terrorist attack and blew up a building and started a war. So one, I don't want to make you mad at me right now. Two, you're my only healer, so I'm not going to be kicking you out before this final battle, but we are going to have some words when this is done.
We will have
one. I wish that was a dialogue option because that was so much what I was feeling. Anyway, so now that I've kind of given you overall what is going on in these games, how about we have a little ad break? A word from our sponsors.
Excellent idea.
Dwarven Crafts. Find Dwarven Crafts direct from Orzammar. Orzammar.
Yes.
Orzammar?
Orzammar.
Orzammar!
See, I kind of wanted to do an ad break about taint juice, but
no!
I feel like you wouldn't go for that.
That's
one.
That's not what that is. I don't know why they called it that.
I know exactly why.
So...
Okay. No, it's my turn.
Yes.
I have things that I want to bring up and I want to talk about, some questions and the like.
Okay.
Primarily two things. First one, I cannot remember the name, but this was the... the third game, Inquisition, actually caused a bit of good waves with a transgendered soldier.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. He's everybody's favorite character in the entire game. The most... angry I saw of people was that he was not romanceable. Everyone wanted him as a romance option.
I'm sure they did. Talk about him. Do you remember their name?
Yes, Krem. Kremesius Aclassi.
He doesn't look like a Krem.
He's from Tevinter.
Krem, human, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, Krem. Krem's not a human name.
It is. Okay, well, in Tevinter, a lot of the names and... stuff that you're going to find there is very largely based in like Latin and Roman because empire.
That makes sense.
So Kremesius Aclassi is a very Latin based name. And his story, when you like meet him, he's the lieutenant of Bull's Chargers, which are Iron Bull's group of mercenaries.
We'll talk about him next.
I love him so much. So he comes from Tevinter, but he left there because I want to say it was because of the transgender thing, but it might have been something completely different. I haven't done the conversation with him in a while, but Tevinter's not really a safe space for anybody who wants to be different.
Mm-hmm.
So Krem was, I think, leaving Tevinter and got into a fight with somebody in a bar.
Okay.
That Bull happened to also be in. And when that person went to, I think, strike him with a mace, Bull caught it in the face. Because he stepped in.
Okay. I was like, stop, fiend! And he just throws his face in the way,
he kind of... he stepped in and he caught this blow to the face, and that's how he lost an eye. That's why he wears an eye patch.
Oh, I did not know that was a...
Yeah, that was how that happened. And then he just kind of turned around and picked Krem up and was like, hey, you want to be a charger? And to this, after this happened, Krem became his most trusted ally. And so he's the lieutenant of the chargers, and he's the one that, fulfills all the commands and stuff like that. And he's also just like super chill, which is why everybody loves him. Like he's just always kind of patiently and devotedly at Bull's side, but also like gives him all kinds of crap for things. And it's just a really great relationship that the two have. And it's just such a good example of transgender representation in stuff, because aside from some gross questions that for some reason you have to ask Krem to get through a cutscene, there's really, Krem is a charger in this mercenary group, and he's badass and he gets things done and he's really cool and fun to talk to. And if you go talk to him after every like big milestone in the game, he'll say, hey, I have some operations that you might want to go check out on your war table. He's like, here's something where you can help. And the fact that he's kind of making these decisions, like, hey, I've got some people that are good to go to this specific place because of this. I saw this happening. It's like, wow, you're really good strategizing. So,
you know, transgendered characters in video games are actually a bit old. Some were not for good reasons. Some were for better reasons. Mm-hmm. As far back as like Paper Mario. People were interested in this particular case because Krem, female to male, correct?
Yes.
You actually get to have a conversation with them about it.
Yes.
And some people didn't like this because they were like, oh, they're drawing unnecessary attention to it. Whereas other people did like that there was this conversation because it was an opportunity for those, I don't want to say ignorant, but uneducated about transgenderism to learn about it in what they believed a more accurate light.
That is exactly why I think it's important that it was in there. Because yes, I can understand why people would be really tired of hearing those questions get asked and like, hey, this isn't your business, this, that kind of thing. But on the other hand, Krem, while dynamic and excellent, is not a real person, and neither is your Inquisitor. And having this moment where you can stop and like, I mean, because all of the answers to these questions were realistic, there was nothing in there that was gross or untrue or fabricated. So being able to be a fake person asking a fake person these questions and have no repercussions, that's good for education. It's good to have that simulated conversation so that you have that in your head and you don't go around asking real people who don't want to be bothered.
And that's what I liked about it, because the questions that the Inquisitor asked were very much questions that, you know, somebody who doesn't know or doesn't understand might ask. Like, one particular one I recall was they asked whether or not it got in the way of their involvement with, what's the group called?
The Chargers.
The Chargers. Like, whether or not that made a difference with their involvement with the Chargers. And they're like, no, they don't care.
No, and they wouldn't. I don't think it would be an issue. Anyway, there's not grounds for it to be an issue because it's not as if the Bulls Chargers are all men. Mm-hmm. It's a group of men, women, dwarves, elves, humans. It's all kinds of people. So it is the breeding grounds for diversity in the Bulls Chargers. There's just all kinds of different characters in it.
I think it was kind of playing on the idea, the old idea of women can't fight. So like, oh, if you used to be a woman, did that affect your ability to fight alongside the Chargers?
No, I think it was, the question was more social. Was it? Do they look at you differently?
Okay.
And the answer was no.
That's what I like, is it is absolutely a question I could imagine someone asking if they didn't understand.
Mm-hmm. So I can understand why people would disagree with why that was in there, because it can be, and not being transgender myself, I'm not an authority on it, but being someone on the outside, knowing how uneducated a person can be about it, I thought it was good to get those answers and not have to make a real person uncomfortable.
I think the fact that it was never vital, I think, is what made it the biggest help. Because if you make it like an important plot point, if you make it a big deal, it's going to be perceived differently. Like, oh, they're doing this for the dramaticity or for the attention of it. Whereas this was, no, here's just a chance for you to learn.
It's a side character with, you know, that kind of thing. Which is something I do like about BioWare, especially in the Dragon Age games, is, I mean, I think this is why they get so much flack for it, is they do try to be diverse. They have a lot of, you know, they have bisexual characters, they have gay characters, they, you know, your character can be whatever they want to be. They have people of color in there, people with different cultures. And they try really hard to do well with that. But as you know, with game development and having big productions like this, there's a lot of deadlines. There's a lot of hoops you have to jump through. There's a lot of things that get missed or get crunched down at the end of the wire, which, so I think they do honestly try to get that diversity in there and have a good, colorful group of characters to move this story along. But I think that when you're developing large games like this, it's just so much harder to get every detail right when you have so many other things to worry about as far as coding and graphics and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Open world RPGs are the absolute hardest to have a fleshed out world for, because you cannot polish every inch.
Mm-hmm.
There's simply too much. That's why Oblivion, Skyrim, they have like 5 voice actors.
Yeah.
But there's millions upon millions of lives, and like, you're going to find repeated and boring stuff just because, yeah, they can't do all of it.
Yeah, and I mean, they're not perfect. I'm not saying they're, you know, I think they're genuinely trying, but, you know, it's just the give and take.
Mm-hmm.
You can't condemn somebody for trying.
And so, speaking of BioWare and sexual positivity, how about that sex?
Okay, so I think that it's the best in Dragon Age Inquisition, even though Origins has some legs to stand on because they've got Zevran.
I don't know if it's like just the Star Trek history in me or not, but I'm more influential of the Mass Effect games. Something about just getting freaky with some aliens.
Okay, and that's exactly what BioWare is at this point, is like Mass Effect is sci-fi dating sim, and Dragon Age is medieval dating sim. Because that's, I mean, you can play it once and it's fine, but the reason you play it again and again is to romance different people.
But the game, they never get any flack. Normally, if you try to add unnecessary sexualization of something, people will criticize it. But I've not heard anyone complain about...
Because that's the point of playing a BioWare game.
That's the interesting thing. Since I haven't really played any of the Dragon Ages, I'm imagining it was like fighting and fantasy and all that stuff. And at its core, that's what it is. But it also just happens to have this romanticizing.
It's because it's fun. And because they make characters that are pretty worthy of romance. So
Iron Bull.
Iron Bull is what
I'm
you
aware of
to
Iron
talk
Bull.
About.
He okay. is a... He is freaky.
Yes, I think Iron Balls is probably the most fun romance route to go down because there's just a lot going on there. So Iron Ball subscribes to the...
I'm sorry, can I interrupt?
Sure.
I remember this video of... I don't remember who you were romancing, but somebody's custom character was romancing an elf. And there was this cutscene where they're like, "You're so beautiful."
Oh, no.
And it cuts to just this unholy-looking being of a character. It looks like one of the little green alien men from, like, Encounters of the Third Kind.
I actually can bring that up later if you want me to.
I definitely want to watch that after.
It's like the name of the character is like Fuckface McNasty or something like that. And it wasn't Monster Factory, but it was Monster Factory worthy.
It was a monster. That suddenly popped
which
back
is
into my brain.
The person they were romancing was Solas, who has since been completely dragged through the mud by the fandom for good reason. He kind of tried to destroy the world.
Oh.
But he is a romance option in Inquisition. You can only romance him if you are a female elf.
Okay, so
there are restrictions
to that
in Inquisition,
which makes sense. Not everyone is going to be swinging both ways.
It really does go along with their characters. So Solas, only if you're a female, only if you're an elf.
Mm-hmm.
Cullen is only if you're female, but you can be. I don't know if you can be a dwarf, but you can be human or elf.
From my history of dwarves, I can understand if they're not exactly attracted to them.
And then
I'm sorry, that's dwarf shaming.
For Iron Bull, you can be anybody.
Now, Iron Bull, he is the most talked about.
Yes. Because
buddy.
Here's the thing with Iron Bull is his romance is super fun because, like I said, he subscribes to the BDSM course of sex.
Oh, yeah.
But the way he approaches it is very casual because as far as the Kunari are concerned, and as he comes to you as a Kunari spy, he says, "I've got these connections. I can help your Inquisition."
Interesting.
I will feed them some information about you, and I will feed you some information that, you know, we're doing or that we're finding out. And it goes both ways. And so you're like, cool, that's fine. He's very open and upfront about what he's doing up until there's a moment where you have to choose between if you strengthen the Kunari Alliance or if you save his chargers from being killed. And if you don't save the chargers, you're a monster, and I don't fuck with that. If you do save the chargers, he becomes Talvashoth, which is a renegade. He's no longer with the Kuhn. He's no longer part of the Kunari. And so he's just with you now. There's no feeding information back and forth. He's cut off from the Kunari, and he's just yours now. But you saved his chargers, which is more important to him.
Of course.
So he is a very upfront guy, very casual about things. And within the Kuhn, there's no, like, marriage.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have sex with somebody, you just have sex with them.
Super
and then
cash.
They even have places where you just go to have sex. I think it's like their breeding program type thing.
A sexateria.
It is they are called Tamasrins, the people who you go to for this. And he's like,
wait, people?
Yeah.
Are they like, like prostitute people, or do they just manage?
It's not.
I was imagining a location.
I mean, I guess it could be, but the Tamasrins, I think, are like the breeders of the Kunari.
Okay.
They take care of the young, and so that's kind of, you go to them to have sex.
I see.
I just loved his description is like, sometimes it's a very long and involved all day thing. Sometimes it's just, you know, in and out and you're done. It's like, okay. But he's very casual about it. Apparently, if you listen to the different NPCs having conversations around you when you're in like Skyhold or Haven, you can hear what was so funny to me was like novice Chantry sisters. I don't think they were fully fledged Chantry sisters, but you can hear them gossiping about sleeping with Iron Bull.
Oh my god.
It's the funniest thing. But you can hear about it everywhere. And then there are a lot of very important things to me about Iron Bull's romance. And one of them is, it is kind of rough and tumble. He comes to you and he's like, are you really sure about this? And you're like, yes, do your worst. And he's like, no, you don't want me to do that.
No.
But if it gets to be too much, here's your safe word. You go about that a couple of cutscenes, and then you go talk to him and you're like, hey, what is this going? What is this?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, you know, it's up to you. If you want to be exclusive, then we're exclusive and I'm all yours.
Oh, that's nice.
And he's like, if not, that's fine too. I'm not fussed. He said, I'm just in. Oh man, the best line in that is just this conversation you have with him later. It's not even a cutscene. And you say something about, you said you're going to give me what I needed. What did you mean by that? And he says, you're the Inquisitor. You're in charge of lots of people all day, every day. You have to tell everyone what to do and you have to figure everything out. He said, I'm here to give you a safe place where you can be told what to do and you don't have to think about anything.
Here's your chance to be a sub.
Yeah, yes. So I thought that was very nice. He is very thoughtful, even while being casual and...
Oh, yeah. He's cool, not being greedy either.
Yeah, so he does have feelings, and it's very nice. It's very, like...
I'm told people really like his voice, too.
Yeah, you actually... Do you want to know who his voice is?
Who?
Freddie Prinze Jr.
That's a name.
He played Fred Jones in a live-action Scooby-Doo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That guy?
Yeah.
Oof.
And you've played Mass Effect 3, right?
No.
No?
I've only played the first. I'm really not on that BioShock.
He's in Mass
BioShock.
Effect. He is in Mass Effect 3 as well, also playing a huge man.
Of course.
It is... Oh, shoot. What's his name? I don't think he was in the other games. I think he may have just been in some DLC or some extended content or whatever, but... Vega.
That sounds familiar.
I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Vega. So, yeah, he plays a huge guy there, too. Yeah, he's the one everyone thinks is the most fun because he's the most accepting of everyone. He's the most... He because he's a spy. He's very observant. He does what you need.
That's true.
So, yeah, we just did that entire section about Iron Bull.
Well, speaking of post-climax, I think it's time we ended up our show.
No, I have more to talk about.
We cannot go forever. We're almost at an hour.
I know. But we're going to edit out some stuff.
Oh my god, not enough stuff.
I just have a couple more things to say.
Okay, one more thing. We got to end after that.
I think just an important takeaway about the Dragon Age games in particular is it's really kind of a study in gamer interpretation. Okay. It's like, I saw so many internet fights about, they were saying, you're supposed to think this, and they want you to think this. And I'm like, that's not what this game is. This game is about, you know, hearing the philosophies of both sides, and they're both deeply flawed. Each side has deep, deep flaws, but they also have some redeemable qualities. And it's difficult to weed through that stuff, but I think that's a really important thing to have nowadays, especially in our quote-unquote problematic society thing, is we have call-out culture. We want to call people out for every wrong thing they do, and we want to police how people enjoy things and what they're allowed to enjoy and what they're not. And I think an important thing in Dragon Age is nothing you support is going to be virtuous. And that shouldn't mean that you just take it at face value. If you want to change it, change it. And there's not a lot of opportunities to do that in Dragon Age, but it's something to think about.
Okay.
It's not just them feeding you opinions. You meet different people who are in different factions, and some of those people are good, some of those people are bad. And you decide for yourself what you're going for. So they do the pseudo choice of you choose this or you choose that, and it's not really going to matter in the end. In Dragon Age 2, it mattered a bit, depending on if you sided with Templars or Mages.
Yeah.
But given that it was such a police state at that point, it was really difficult for me to side with Templars because what was going on at the top was just so very corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a study in, you know, form your own opinions, understand that no faction is fully virtuous just because having that many people, I mean, you just can't. People are flawed, and you get that many flaws together, it's just going to happen. So do what you can to save your world.
Okay.
And then kind of go from there.
So to summarize, choice is yours, racism, gooch juice, BDSM.
No, that's not. Oh, God.
I'm sorry, taint
it is.
Juice.
There are so many things in these games. There's so much more than that, but yeah.
So finish ourselves up with some housekeeping. We are the Cozy Co-op. If you enjoyed listening, give us a review on iTunes. That really helps us get seen. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, on the website. Our news comes from thelizardrock.com. I write news there Monday through Friday, some editorial pieces as well. Check it out. It's also where we host the podcast. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at Cozy Co-op Podcast and on Facebook. If you want to send some feedback, maybe suggest a future game or just tell me why I need to stop saying taint juice, you can email us as well at CozyCoop@thelizardrock.com.
That's it for today. Cozy up with us next week on the Cozy Co-op. Outro music.